Welcome to Headlines. This is David Lichtenstein. This week we will have one of the world's great experts on Hashgacha, the director of Kashrus for the CRC, Rabbi Shalom Fishbein. Additionally, we will have the rabbinical coordinator of the CRC, Rabbi Kiva Niehaus, and he will be speaking about, Rabbi Fishbein will be speaking about, are our simchas really kosher? Because we often bring in party planners, and they create a whole plethora of problems which you may not be aware of. And everybody knows that Kashrus by Klal Yisrael is so important, and he will be bringing things to our awareness that you will be quite astonished. Rabbi Akiva Niehaus will be speaking about wine and liquor. He's one of the world's foremost experts on sherry casks, wine, waiters, etc. Be an honor to have them. We will also be speaking to somebody who you should grab your pen and take his number when we speak to him, Rabbi Pesach Friedman, who runs a chesed organization called Chein V'Chesed. So if you have children in Eretz Yisrael, you have family in Eretz Yisrael, you have parents, you have neighbors, or you plan on being there, and you run into any problems that you're there, not that we chas v'shalom want to be mighty laws in Eretz Yisrael, but it's a foreign language, you may not have the connections you have here in America, and you know somebody who either is having a baby there, got sick, they have an electric issue, etc., rental. This is Mr. Connected in Eretz Yisrael, and his chesed organization is, it's like having an entire mishpacha over there. He brings his protector to you. That is the chesed that he does. He has a staff of seven, so grab a pen. You'll be astonished at the chesed that he will do for others. Have a mishpacha, an instant connection, protecting Eretz Yisrael, Pesach Friedman. He will be our next guest, and he'll be the last guest when we close the program. Last week, we spoke to Rabbi Eisenstein in Eretz Yisrael, then we had Rabbi Gluck on, so I would like to, for 1 minute, continue, because we got a bunch of emails about, you know, the view in Eretz Yisrael about dealing with molesters, the view here. So I wanted to speak about this week. We have Yisrael in the Parsha, and Yisrael says, Naval Tibol, he says to Moshe Rabbeinu. And he says, Loi Taiv Hadzavar, it's not good what you're doing. You're coming and you are the one speaking to all of Klal Yisrael, but no, you have to set up Sari Alafim, Sari Meyei, Sari Asara. So the Rashbam has an interesting way of saying Naval Tibol. He says, it's not that you're going to be exhausted, but he says, Naval Tibol, he says, it's like the Lashon of confusion, like it says by the Dor HaMabul. Everybody's going to get confused, which is a little strange. Confused? Why are they going to be confused? So I heard a beautiful pshat from a brilliant Rosh Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Elia Levin. And he says, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu spoke one language to all of Klal Yisrael. They were all the Yotzei Dor HaMidbar. Yisrael is the outsider. He's coming. And when Yisrael comes and he hears them speaking one language, he says, you know, there's going to come a time when there's going to be a need to speak many tongues. There's going to be people who don't just have one understanding of the Torah. They're going to have different ways to understand the Torah. There's going to be the Torah of America. There's going to be the Torah Jews from Paris and Jews from London and Jews from Bavel and Jews from all 180 countries. And we're going to have to speak a language that they understand too. You know, people see things from so many different views. I heard a story years ago. You know, they say Sherlock Holmes was sleeping one night with Watson outside, and he looks up and he says, Watson, what do you see? So Watson says, I see the stars, the Milky Way, the galaxies, amazing. He turns to Sherlock Holmes and he says, why, what do you see? So Sherlock looks up and he says, I see somebody stole our tent. So people see things very differently, right? You know, if you would have asked somebody 150 years ago, could slaves vote? And they would have said, slaves? They're not even humans. Right? An American today would look at you in astonishment. 100 years ago or 70 years ago, you would say, could women vote? The person would have said, women? Women are like cattle. What do you mean, could women vote? Do you know that There was a recently Time magazine said that in 100 years from now, in 50 years from now, he says clones will be voting. And in 100 years from now, one of the issues that will be debated fiercely in America will robots be allowed to vote? Because of artificial intelligence, they will have the same status of humans. Something that to an American today seems absolutely bizarre. But this is how people, you know, our minds evolve to different situations. Who looks at the concept of slavery today as anything but foreign? So people in different situations, we evolve to new situations. I mean, a generation ago, could you imagine an iPhone to somebody who lived 100 years ago, or even honestly, to our parents, what we could see on an iPhone today? So the Torah really changes. And, you know, Reb Chaim Shmulevitz in his Sichas and Tavshin Lamed Aleph in Yotes, Maimer Yotes, has a fabulous thing that I think everybody should see. And Reb Chaim says, and I alluded it to last week, he says every generation has its own Torah and needs its own leaders. And he says, Chayni HaMa'agol woke up and he says, he went to the Beis Medrash and he said, I'm Chayni HaMa'agol. And he was the leader of the prior generation, but he had slept for 70 years, and they didn't believe him. So Reb Chaim says, why didn't he just get up and say Shtickel Torah? Why didn't he say some profound, amazing thought? And Reb Chaim said, because they wouldn't have accepted it. And I give you an example. Imagine if Damarim Schiff came to a yeshiva today, and he got up and he said a Shtickel Torah, he said a thought. He said, like the first pshat in Taisvis, the second pshat in Tais is Cheshbin. According to the first Gerson Rashi, you can make a whole Cheshbin. According to the second Gerson Rashi, so let's change the Nusach. And they would say, what? That's a lecture? Out of here. We want to hear something profound and deep and thoughtful, philosophical, Hakira of Reb Chaim. Out of here. The Torah really does change according to the generations. And you think it's nutty? You think it's just some type of Musaf, Reb Chaim Shmulevitz? Look at the Rambam. The Rambam's only halacha. The Rambam in Mamrim, Perig Beis, halacha aleph, paskin something. The Rambam, the great halachist, the Rambam, says that a bezdin hagadol has the right. The Russian Rambam, bezdin hagadol shadarshu beechas min amidis, and a second bezdin after them comes, and changes the halacha. It has the right to change any halacha that it wants to, even if it's a later bezdin and a smaller bezdin in a later generation. So the Kesef Mishnah says, what? We have a rule that you can only, a bezdin, a later court can only change it if it's greater than it, b'chachmu b'minyan, in knowledge and in number. So the Kesef Mishnah says, no, the Rambam holds, and this is nifsek halacha, it can only uproot. The later bezdin can only uproot it if it's changing a takana, a minig, or a gzera. But if it's changing gufei shel Torah, the later bezdin has the right to change gufei shel Torah, because Torah changes, the second bezdin has a right to understand Torah the way it does according to its zman. And it's nifsak in the Rambam and Perek Beis Halacha Aleph of Mamrim. The Torah, every generation understands the Torah the way it is iterative to that generation. Something amazing. So Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, it's nifsak lahalacha. It's interesting. I saw in one of the great Chassidish Sfarim, Igra Dekala, he says that the Gemara in the end of HaMoicher Sasfina says, it's an Agadah to Gemara. We mix here halacha, we have the Rambam, we have the Litvish Reb Chaim, now we're going to go to the Chassidim because we're a universal show. The Gemara says at the end of HaMoicher Sasfina, Reb Papa says, the last line in HaMoicher Sasfina, it's Tzadik Aleph in Babasra, he says, everything is fabulous when it's older. Wine, aged meat, if you can age it properly, it's tastiest. Aged honey, it's all better. Amar Reb Papa, kol milia tikam alya, levar mi tamri, except for dates. Dates are good when they're fresh. So the great Chassidish master, the Igra Dekala, says, tamri is only good fresh. You know why? Because the tamar is a tzaddik. Tzaddik ha tamar yifrach. And he says, you know what tzaddik is, you need? You need a contemporary tzaddik. You need a tzaddik who lives today, now, who knows what an iPhone is, who knows what molestation is in this generation, who knows the generation, what this generation's problems are, who does not worried about last generation. They say in 100 years ago, you know what the issues were? Communism, socialism, Kant. That's not today's issues. Nobody's worried about your kids becoming a communist. Today's problems with your kids are iPhones and Xbox and who knows what's going on the street. That's the problems today. So kol milia tikam alya levar mi tamre. Today you need the tzaddik who's tamar. Today you don't need a tzaddik atika. You need today. That's why you need the American rav to paskin this. You need the rav from your city who's aware of your children's problems. Today the guy from Eretz Yisrael could be great, but he doesn't know what's going on here. You need the rav from your neighborhood who's plugged in right to your current contemporary situations. Rabbi Eisenstein's a great Talmud Chacham, wonderful. He doesn't know what's going on here. You need your local wonderful person. That's the Kol Mili Ma'alye Atika is wonderful. Levarmi Tamri. And that's what Yisrael says to Moshe. He says there can't just be one voice to everybody. You're too high up. We need Sari Alafim, Sari Meya, Sari Asaris. We need to have the voice. A vociferous voice, a voice to every person, the level where they are. I'm the outsider. There's going to be so many different voices. That's Yisrael's message, a voice for every person, where they are, on their level. Before Kabbalah Satira, Yisrael comes to say, voices for the many different voices. We are having a fabulous raffle this week. We want to know what station are you listening to us? Are you listening to us on Nachum Segal? Are you listening to us on WSNR or on WMCA? So if you email us at info@headlinesbook.com or you can call us at 732-740-0200 and you tell us where you're listening to us, you can win a 500 Visa gift card. Again, email us at info@headlinesbook.com or call us at 732-740-0200. Tell us how you're listening to us. You'll win a $500 Visa gift card. We'll make one drawing this week. We'll announce it by next week's show. We have the honor of having with us on the phone Rabbi Shalom Fishbane, who's one of the world's experts in kashrus. He's the director of kashrus for the Chicago Rabbinical Council. And he will be discussing simchas. What can we or can't we eat? What a party, when we bring party planners into our simchas, are we opening up Pandora's box from a kashrus point of view? And we also have Rabbi Akiva Niehaus, who's the rabbinic coordinator of kashrus, and he will be talking about drinks, scotch, wine, etc. I imagine we'll be speaking about sherry casks for those who are Glenlivet aficionados. So we have two of the world experts on kashrus and simchas. Welcome, Chashuv Rabbanim.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Rabbi Fishbane, when we walk into a simcha by some friend and it's beautifully laid out and all the cakes match and there's pettifors, etc., and there's all kinds of smorgasbords, as somebody, as a umma who kashrus is one of the asidus of our belief, what should we be aware of as an educated consumer?
All right, it's a very good and relevant question. It used to be there were two types of affairs. One was a fully catered affair where a kashrus agency was setting the standards, sending in the mashgiach's on premise, and the entire event ran according to the mashgiach from the commissary where the food was prepared throughout the entire affair, and then afterwards the mashgiach stayed late at night until they finished the cleanup, the dishwashing, and he locked the door, and then he's the only one, he's the last one out.
He was Meishel Bekupa.
Yes.
Right, yeah. Okay, and today?
And then the second way traditionally is a drop-off. You're making a kiddush, a simcha, even something in your house or a chul. You call up a kosher caterer, you order some food, they bring it sealed, they drop it off, they walk out. And we here in Chicago have a rule that if you're doing a drop-off, you cannot have the owner of the restaurant or caterer or even their known staff to help set it up. Once the guests arrive, they have to be out 10 minutes before the guests arrive. So no one should walk in and think that the party itself is under Hashgacha. Yeah. Those were the good old days. What's happened is that comes along the party planner. The party planner or event planner, convention planner, they're all the same thing. It started off easy. You know what? I like the decor. Can you bring some props? Can you bring a couple of extra things to make it look nice? Arrange some gifts or whatnot. And it stopped over there. But then they started getting into, you know what, I know someone that makes the most amazing cakes. Let me take care of the dessert. You know, you do what you need to do as far as drop off from food. I'll take care of that. And eventually that's become into where the party planner coordinates all details. And what's happening is basically they've become a caterer. The party planner walks to the person and says, look, I know the very best restaurant that knows how to make halupshes. And the other place I know they make the best cigars, you know, meat cigars. And the other place makes the following, whatever it is. I'm going to put together the best of the entire community's caterers and restaurants. It's going to be an amazing event. So now what they at SMR are now is they're a caterer without a commissary. So what could be wrong with that?
And without a mashgiach.
Well, right. Without a mashgiach, can say, what do I need a mashgiach for? I'm all bringing it in. And I have to tell you, there are many times where the party planner will even bring a mashgiach themselves. But here is, we've been having discussions amongst the kashrus agency. At the last ACCO conference, we had about 80 different hashgachas in the room talking about their individual community and how the party planners of each person. It was amazing. Everyone said, it's not just my community. You know, the rabbi in Australia said, I thought it was just in Australia. And the rabbi in Borough Park and the rabbi in Chicago and all the Rabbanim Machshirim were saying, party planners are a step backwards. And here's the reason why. Because ultimately, the Rav HaMachshir of an event that's run by a party planner is the party planner. Even if they bring along a mashgiach, ultimately they're the ones deciding policies and what is going to be. The mashgiach is only as good as the Rav HaMachshir. So I'll go through a couple of small things that we see over and over again, and we can focus certainly on the scotch and the whiskey and then I'll perhaps suggest ways to better ourselves and how your listeners, the consumers, could do their diligence to taka eat the Mahadran kosher. What we've seen over and over again, homemade foods coming without certifications, fancy cakes like you mentioned, pastries, the halachos of Basar Shem Salomon Ayin are complex, as you well know, and a party planner doesn't necessarily have all the halachos down pat, to say the least. Milchiks and Fleishiks at the same place. How many times have we walked in to like a parlor meeting at someone's house and it's a milchik dessert reception, but they bought sushi at one of our places where it's tempura and they were using the Fleishik fryer to cook it, and you had, you know, meat, at least meat equipment at these milchik places. When we get to Shabbos, that we see is the biggest problem.
Wait, and it's more than that, Rabbi Fishbein, that once you're taking from individual homes ad hoc, you have a lot of times where there are people who are not makbid on, let's say, something that had a Hiras Chacham, and you have, let's say, the Gemara and Chulin, the Flamed Zion, or the Ramah and the end of Kufte Zion. That there are people who are makbid not to eat from Davar Shehoi Rabbi Chacham, and there are a lot of people who are not makbid, and it's sort of opening up, you know, it's opening yourself up to a pool of endless question shilas, that there's nobody to be meir except for the woman or the fellow who may know very little halacha, who's in effect the party planner.
You said it perfectly. That's exactly the issue. They're just not. And they want Let me, we spend our day in kashrus. We spend our day following seasons, Lamushel. Okay, are berries good this season, not good this season? What's the story with grapes, with raisins? We live kashrus. We know bugs. We know, we follow, and we live it, and we talk to each other. A party planner could walk in and say, oh, yeah, once, well, half a year ago, I was at a simcha. I saw that they had, I don't know, blueberries out, so it must be blueberries good. Not understanding that there was a tkufa that was good, that wasn't good. I'm giving as an example about blueberries. It doesn't necessarily mean we hold blueberries are a problem. But you have to live kashrus and be a kashrus professional. Amol, I don't have to tell you that you, the amol dekum mashkichim, you know, didn't necessarily, it was, you couldn't find a job. You became a mashkiach. Unfortunately, that was the olden days, right? Today, Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem. My colleague, Rabbi Niaus, who's with me today. Choshev ben Taira, coming out of the Lakewood Koilo. And he said to himself, he even wrote a book on sherry casks, which I'm sure we'll get to in a minute. And he had as a knack, in other words, as a profession today. They take it seriously. We at the CRC, we send our mashkichim to certain courses. You want to be the mashkiach that's in charge of ice cream places? We're gonna set you up for a 2-day course on how to make ice cream. Learn from the bottom. Go to the Madison, Wisconsin, where they teach the stuff. Now you can be a mashkiach kashrus on ice cream. Chehena v'chehena.
You know, let me tell you a story, Rabbi Fish. Yeah. Let me tell you a story. Rabbi Bick said over this story. He said a woman used to come in always and ask him shilas. And at one point, she realized that her shilas were bothering him. She used to ask, so she stopped. So a year later, he sees her, and he says, Rebbetzin, how come you don't come in to me anymore and ask me shilas? She says, you know, I saw I was being matriach derav, I was being bothered, burdensome. So I decided to paskin by myself. I figured I knew enough. He said, like, give me an example. He said, I know that a chumra dika shayla, you paskin la chumra, and a kula dika shayla, you paskin la kula. So he said, give me an example. He said, you know, we have a shiksa by us who uses the same oven, and one time her pot of food got mixed up with ours, and I remembered you saying that toyas akum is mutta. So we said it's mutta. So he said, that was a kula dikashayla. And he said, and what's a chumra dikashayla? He said, you know, I like to make the homemade kishka, so I take chicken helzalach, the skin, and I fill it up. And then one time I used the same needle to sew a hole in my husband's pants, and then he wanted to wear those pants during the 9 days. So he said, to wear the fleshidika pants in the 9 days, that's asa ikaradin. He said, that's a chumradika shayla. Now, what happens if this lady is a party planner?
All right. There you go. There you go. It's an amazing thing. So just to finish the quick list, there's Kalim, there's fish and meat. The Shabbos we have seen over and over and over again. And I've also seen that the party planner sometimes takes, just the other day we walked in and there was the party planner who couldn't get the right knife. She brought it from her own house. She brought it from her own house. And that's certainly, there's a yesod here, and I want to give Rabbi Niehaus a chance to talk about one of the biggest problems the party planners bring to the table, and that's liquors. But the yesod of a party planner is there's no such thing as saying no. If you want to use your Bubby's gefilte fish recipe, bevakasha. And I have to tell you, I've interviewed many party planners while I was researching and gathering my information for tackling this from the ACO standpoint. And they have all admitted that we are a step backwards for kashrus. And the yesod is because we cannot say no, because we want to give everything to the client. And they even said to me, if someone would come to and say, I don't even want to do a kosher program or a kosher affair, okay, that's your problem. I don't mind doing it. That's a little bit of an extreme, but I have seen that. But one of the main things, with your permission, if it's okay, if I can ask Rabbi Niehaus, to talk about some of the issues that they bring when it comes to liquor. Because I could tell you one thing, and if you remember last time we schmoozed about Starbucks, there are two things that get people really, really riled up when it comes to kashrus. You can talk to me about whatever you want, but don't take away two things, my Starbucks coffee and my Glenlivet 12. they get really riled up, and you know they lose all sense of purpose. So we have a fun time sometimes here at the office trying to calm people down and say, let's just talk kashrus. Not these aren't chumras, these aren't opinions. Let's talk kashrus. So if with your permission,
but Rabbi Fishman, some of my best friends are party planners. We have in the neighborhood, let's say here in Muncie, there's a Rebbetzin Chani Weinberg. She's considered a fantastic party planner, an Eishes Chayil, Yiras Hashem. So my question is, let's not just end off with party planners are bad. Like, what is the solution? The Gemara Gittin comes before Kiddushin, and the Sidrei HaMasechtis is because the Refuah always comes before the Makkah.
Right.
So,
Absolutely. I agree with you.
Many women don't have the ability to pull together a party, and they don't have maybe the time, the skill set, etc. So, understanding that bringing in, a famous caterer like Greenwald could be very costly and burdensome. On the other hand, the women may not have the ability to actually do the party. So, we recognize that there is inherent danger. What is the refuah?
Oh, very good. So this is a question we've been studying, and the easy answer is okay. Let party planners get a hechsher, which I don't really like to say aleph, because to be honest, they'll accuse that the kashrus agencies that are saying that they have an incentive that they get more accounts, and that's not the goal here at all. It's sveitins. It's not always practical. You do it in someone's home. Party planners, as do many things in people's homes. And it's just not practical to always have a party planner Rosh Kocha. So what I would suggest is the following, that certainly any time there is a party in a public place, whether it's a shul or a shul's social hall, there. Remember what we started off with this. You always need a Rav HaMachshir. The Rav HaMachshir, so the rabbi of that particular shul should be giving the authority to be the Rav HaMachshir. Let the party planner find the Mashgiach, but let the host pay the rabbi who will pay the Mashgiach. Now the Mashgiach needs to run things by the rabbi. And by the way, I just want to tell you, not many rabbis are bakant in all of kashrus. We at the CRC actually put together a list of 83 different questions that can come up in a shul kitchen. We wrote it out, whether it's Bishul this or Chazar. You, the rabbi, write down what your policies, what your halachic policies will be, and then we'll help train a mashgiach of your choice according to your policies. So that's something that I can share with you, I can email you, whatnot, but it's a very good thing to help the rabbi do this. That's Aleph. If that's not possible, it's in someone's home. I agree with you. There are many very fine party planners, and I don't know the person you mentioned, but I'll take your word that she's your shemayim and all that. What I would suggest, again, is the same thing. Instead of her hiring a mashgiach, let the person making the simcha hire the mashgiach. And now, there's a much more direct connection between the mashgiach not getting paid necessarily, by the party planners, which makes it more difficult, and we all have negiyas, but it's coming from a different source, and together with that, and this is what every rav in a kehila really should be doing, they should be giving a list of, they should put together a list of known mashgiachim in a, you said you live in Muncie, right? So Muncie should have 20 known mashgiachim that are bakant and hashgacha, and every party planner can walk in to a host and say, look, these are approved mashgiachim by the local rabbanim. You choose whoever you want, and you pay them directly. And now at least we've taken it up a notch. Is it foolproof? Is it 1,000%? No, not yet. But you've taken it out of the party planner making the decisions, and you're using a well-known mashgiach, and that he's not being paid by the party planner. I think that's at least a temporary solution to the problem.
So, Rabbi Fishbein, without being presumptuous, why wouldn't it make sense for an organization like the CRC maybe to partner with Rav HaGaon Rabbi Nachum Ginak and the OU, to sort of put together like a certification program for Mashgichim, where you go through your 83 questions, you test them, you say, you are now a certified Mashgiach, and when somebody does a Simcha, they can say, we have a certified Mashgiach who knows all the halachas, so you... It sort of make it more programmatic, more than ad hoc and guesswork. That was question one. And question two is, do you have something like a guide for party planners, like, dear Miss Party Planner, here are some of the things that you should and should not be doing. No outside food, no beebs. Like, how do we educate party planners? Because for the most part, they're Erlicha, wonderful people who may just not know all the interviews. How can we give them a set of guidelines to adhere to?
These are both excellent ideas. I'd like to address the first one. It is something that we briefly spoke about, Mitam ACCO. As your listeners may know, ACCO stands for Association of Kosher Organizations, which is the umbrella group of many of the large agencies. And in Chinami, it's a great idea to put together an ACCO curriculum to have a certified Mashgiach, and a Mashgiach can be ACCO approved. It's been talked about, but not at the strength that I'd like it to be. And I thank you for bringing it up to perhaps push it and make that a reality. So thank you for that. As far as the second thing, sure. I think we can start with that 83 questionnaire where, you know, perhaps the party planner could take that, study it, and take it to their personal Rav, or, you know, the Rav HaMachshir in their community, and start with that. But that certainly is a good start to a very good solution.
So is that available online anywhere, the 83 questions?
It actually is. We have a in-house newsletter, but what's new in the latest in Kasha is called Sapirim. And it could be found on our website. And let me just see if I can find it right now and tell you. Oh, one second. Here it is. So it's called Shul Mashgiach Training. It was written in May 2012. Sapirim, May 2012, Shul Mashgiach Training. And that would be... that would be the 83 questionnaire.
So it would be sapirim.com, is that it?
No, it's on the crcweb.org.
Crcweb.org.
Yeah. And maybe you're right. Maybe it is sapirim.com also. I don't remember if we... I'm going to type that in.
You know what, I have an idea, Rabbi. While I'm interviewing Rabbi Niehaus, maybe you could give us the exact URL. Look it up.
Absolutely. Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much, Rabbi Fishbein, for enlightening us in this area. So welcome, Rabbi Akiva Niehaus, and help us. What are we supposed to look for when we pick up a bottle of whiskey or wine? What should we be concerned about?
Okay, first of all, thank you for having me. This is a very passionate subject, as Rabbi Fishbein mentioned. And as soon as you start telling people what they can or can't drink, all logic goes to the wayside. So we at the CRC developed very clear guidelines to advise consumers what they can drink, what they can't drink. And I think you wouldn't believe the amount of phone calls and emails we get every day asking about this product and that product. And we do our best to stay on top of the market, to see what's available and advise the consumers accordingly. So, you know, obviously any product which has a reliable hechsher, you could certainly feel comfortable that knowing that it's kosher to the highest standards. Where it gets more complicated is where the product you pick up doesn't have a kosher symbol on the logo, on the bottle, and then the question starts, well, is it kosher or not?
Which is the vast which is the vast majority of alcoholic drinks. Probably 95% do not have a hechsher. Is that fair to say? I've never seen, walked into a liquor store, except for, you know, the Jewish brands, I've never seen an OU or an OK or a Huff K or a Seer on any beer, et cetera, to my knowledge. Never seen it.
Well, you are correct that it's definitely the vast majority of the market. However, we have found hundreds of products that are kosher certified and do have the logo on the bottle. And if you go to our website, crcweb.org /liquor list, you will find 24 pages of products which are recommended by the CRC And many of them have hashgacha. You'd be surprised, and our consumers are certainly appreciative of that. And you can imagine the research that's necessary to keep this updated. So those are the products with the logo. But as you pointed out, the vast majority do not. So that's where it gets very confusing. And consumers really have to appreciate the fact that this is an evolving industry, and it's sometimes in things change, and consumers have to be aware of that. That just because your grandparents drank this particular scotch and liqueur doesn't mean that it's necessarily kosher today. Things change, and if you don't keep up to date with the latest trends, then what your grandparents drank today may not be kosher. So I think if consumers approach this industry of liquor with that understanding, then they could appreciate certainly that some products may in fact not be recommended, even the most popular ones, just due to lack of awareness that people drink it, but they should look for alternative options. So let's, it's a big, huge industry, and I'm sure this could take up a couple hours discussion, but let's just focus nice and clear. Scotch. Many of your listeners probably are aware that the Scotch has a very famous cautious issue called sherry casks. By law, all Scotch must be matured in oak barrels for at least 3 years. Now, that's the law. The problem is that Scotch manufacturers often use used oak barrels to mature their product because that gives a more mellow flavor and it takes care of the bitter tannins from oak barrels. They very often use used oak barrels. So the problem comes up, well, what was in the barrels before they matured the Scotch? So the answer is that they could use any kind of barrel that they find. Very often they use bourbon barrels because by American law, bourbon must be matured in new oak barrels and it cannot be reused. So what do the bourbon manufacturers do with their tons of used barrels? They ship them to Scotland, and that's how they mature their barrels. If that's the case, then there's absolutely no cautious concerns whatsoever with Scotch because the ingredients are all kosher. By law, it's governed. It's regulated by the Scottish government, UK government, and the barrels are fine too because they're maturing them in kosher barrels. The problem comes, however, if they're maturing them in wine barrels. And there are many different kinds of wine that it can be matured in. The most common is the sherry cask. Sherry has nothing to do with cherries. Sherry is a kind of wine from Spain, and it's produced in Spain, a very strong wine. After they age their wine in these barrels, they ship them over to Scotland, and they use them to age their scotch in those barrels. So here comes the question. If a barrel stored non-kosher wine for many years, and then you take your kosher scotch liquid and mature it in these barrels again for many years, how does that affect the kashrus of the scotch?
Well, that you have the Aruch and Klal Chaf Beis and the Mechaba and the Rama and Kuf Yud Aleph Vav that says that afilu bish be'elef lo batel if it's a nice and tam by Shimrei Yayin, and that's what you're alluding to, I imagine, right?
Well, if we could just put the question a little differently, the question here is really a simple case of kavush, because as we know, normally speaking, if you cook something kosher in a non-kosher pot, so if you cook it with heat, with the alkalitis spice, so then the absorptions, the bleas from the pot go into the food. But there's another way of transferring bleas, absorptions, and that is through kavush. If you soak a kosher product in a pot which contained non-kosher product beforehand, and you soak it for 24 hours, and then it absorbs the flavors and bleas from the walls into the wine. So here you have wine which was aging in a barrel for many years, and the walls are gezapped. They're full of wine through and through, so much so that it can even be red on the outside. So it's full of wine, and then you take your scotch and you soak it in the same barrels for 24 hours, that's a situation of kavush, and according to halacha, it takes out the absorptions, that's true, and it takes the absorptions back into the wine, and now you have potentially kosher scotch, which is now fully absorbed from these non-kosher wine absorptions in the walls of the barrel.
So it becomes an issue of bittel. Is it bittel b'shishim? So is it kedei klipa or not kedei klipa? But I'm saying that if it's a nisen tam, we have the Rama in Kuf Yud Aleph Vav that says by Shimrei Yain that afilu be'elef loy bittel. He brings it from a Rajba in Kuf Chav Gimel, right? In Chuvis in Kuf Chav Gimel. So that would be the...
There could be.
So that would be, I'm saying, well, so even if it's bought, there would be no din of bittul b'shishim, because you, if they're doing it in the kisk, they're clearly doing it for the tam. So there would be no kula of bittul. There would be no way to be matir it through bittul. That would be the problem.
Well, so there's two comments on that. First of all, this is a situation of blias, is absorptions. So it may not be subject to that, that chumra you just mentioned about shimrei yayin. And B, very importantly, is we're not exactly sure that they're aging in these wine barrels for flavor, because they may be actually doing it for other purposes, for color, maybe to mellow the product, to make it smoother.
Well, is mellow not flavor? Like, does not considered flavor when you mellow something? Isn't that the flavor of one of the main reasons somebody would drink something is for its mellowness?
Well, actually, so mellow is really just an expression used to smooth the product and make it take away the bite. So it may not actually be adding a flavor. It just be making it smoother to drink and easier to drink. So when you mentioned this question to consumers, the first response inevitably is, what do you mean? Rav Moshe Feinstein said it's fine. And what they're referring to is three tshuvas in the first Chelek Yerideya in Igros Moshe. Rav Moshe deals with something called blended viski. And blended viski he discusses at length, where they mix wine into whiskey. And he says that Me'ikar Din, it's fine, it's kosher because it's batel. But he gives four and then a fifth reason why a Baal Nefesh should stay away from it. But Me'ikar Din, he says it's fine. So the consumer's first response is, what's the problem? Moshe Feinstein says that it's okay. And what we discovered in our research is that the tshuva has absolutely nothing to do directly.
That's by the way, for the listener, that's in Yerideya Samach Beis. Tshuva Samach Beis in Yerideya. Chelek Aleph Samach Beis, right? Yep.
Yes. So there's a tremendous difference between the case he was discussing and contemporary scotch, and the difference is blatant. Rav Moshe Feinstein describes the scenario that he's discussing, and he says that they mixed actual wine into the whiskey for whatever reason, maybe for tax purposes. And he says, well, the minimal amount of wine which they mix in is batel b'sheish. And wine is a special leniency that doesn't apply to most foods, which is batel b'shishim. This only needs to be batel b'shish. So he says they just mixed in a minimal amount, and it's batel. Now, here's the point, and this is crucial.
And Ramosha is referring to a Ramah in Hilchas Peiris and Simon Reish Dalad, that the Taz and Simon Tezayin brings down, that, is, like you said, it's a particular kula, a one-time kula, that yayin, that wine, and is batel b'sheish, that we do not have it by almost any other area in kashrus. Continue. I'm sorry, Rabbi Nias.
Yeah? Now, yeah, that's fine. So here's the crucial point. When you take scotch and you put it into wine barrels to mature, there is no actual wine whatsoever. It's against the law, and they actually hardly regulate this. You cannot mix in any wine directly into scotch. How are they getting the wine in? Through this trick. They're aging their scotch in wine barrels. Now, in this situation where the barrel walls are absorbed through and through, it may be that there's so much wine absorbed in the walls of the barrel that it's not batel b'sheish against the scotch inside there. Because if you take this barrel, and we ran these mathematical equations, I spoke to three mathematicians, you are not going to believe that the ratio of the contents to the walls is only 1:4 or 4.25, somewhere in that vicinity. And it's not batel b'sheish. Just the mere amount of wine which could be absorbed in the walls is just enormous. It's the barrels are very thick. They're an inch thick, very thick. So therefore, even though
the barrels are dry when they're shipped, how could it not be 1:6? I mean, how could a dry barrel that's filled with liquid afterwards say that?
Forget it's a davar charif.
I understand that, but
wait, saying, but let me.
That's charif is a svar in tam, but it's not a svar in sheish. How could, right. If it's dry, it behooves common sense to say that it's 1:6. When you fill up this thing and it's empty, and then you fill it up with liquid, you're going to say that's in the walls is a 6 when it was dry? It just doesn't make any sense.
Okay, so the answer is as follows. First of all, these barrels are actually shipped from their location with wine inside to keep it moist. Because you know what happens to a dry barrel? It splits along the seams between the stays, and it comes completely unwaterproof, and they send it with liquid to keep it moist. That's A. B, according to halacha, wine barrels retain their wine up to 12 months. That's the halacha in the Shulchan Aruch. So We see this when you look at this barrel through halachic glasses, you're going to see a barrel which is full of wine in the walls of this barrel. And if you run those numbers, believe it or not, it's more than sheish. You don't have sheish there, and it's not baltav sheish. And this was an eye opener to us in our research, and it's completely shocking. But that's the reality. The reality is that if you pretend the walls are completely empty, it'd be full of wine. You're not going to have sheish against it. So those tshuvas from Ramesha are very relevant because he discusses halachas, which we can apply to our case. But Ramesha Feinstein was not discussing that. The case of Ramesha, the wine is batal. Here, it's not necessarily batal. And that's the crucial point of Sherry Kass' question is, now that it's a different case in Ramesha, and we have walls which are totally absorbed from wine, how does that play out in halacha? I don't want to leave this hanging, but there are a number of other issues to say they would not be batal, even according to the Chacham Tzvi, and the fact that it's avida l'taima, because they put it for flavor, they put it for coloring, chazusa may not be batal, and a number of other of issues, side issues, which is say it's not batal. But that would seem to be the crux of the issue. Is it kula k'de klipa with the relevant paiskim?
An astonishing, just a really amazing point, the tshuva that you mentioned before from Ramesha. Ramesha says, I believe you should not drink it because it's davar shehayru b'chacham, you have issues with it. But he says, so when I'm at a simcha and it's offered to me, I just drink a little bit so I shouldn't appear to be a bal gaiva.
Yeah, that's correct. But,
it's astonishing that Ramesha was... concerned that, he knew, he said, there's reasons to be makil, there are reasons, not to be stringent, and so that I should not appear to be a balgaiva, I'll drink a mashahu, but is how his midas, the incredible midas of Ramesha, not to hurt a bal simcha's feelings, he said, I would drink a mashahu, even though I hold that it's a b'dievet. Right? Just, when you read that in his two, how many people would, on the contrary, make a big fuss and start yelling and screaming, and on the contrary, Ramesha drank something that he thought was a b'dievet, not to embarrass somebody. Talk about
not to get mixed up, just in conclusion, not to get mixed up. He wasn't discussing scotch and sherry casks, where by law you can't mix it in. It's a secondary question.
He was talking about the case of where wine was mixed in, the shmarim themselves were mixed in. We are having a fabulous raffle this week. We want to know, what station are you listening to us? Are you listening to us on Nachum Segal? Are you listening to us on WSNR or on WMCA? So if you email us at info@headlinesbook.com, or you can call us at 732-740-0200 and you tell us where you're listening to us, you can win a 500 Visa gift card. Again, email us at info@headlinesbook.com or call us at 732-740-0200. Tell us how you're listening to us. You'll win a $500 Visa gift card. We'll make one drawing this week. We'll announce it by next week's show. We have on the phone with us a Rosh Kol from Eretz Yisrael, Harav Pesach Friedman, who runs a chesed organization called Chaim V'Chesed. Welcome, Harav Friedman.
Welcome, Rav David. A pleasure to be with you.
Harav Friedman, could you share with our listeners what Chaim V'Chesed does?
Okay, so in a nutshell, what we do is, your listeners are surely familiar with the fact that it's not always simple to live and manage life in Eretz Yisrael. And
I think that's an understatement.
Okay, I don't want to go too far down that road. We don't want to be Mitzi Diba in any fashion in Eretz Yisrael. It's a wonderful place to live, and I've been fortunate to live here for over 20 years. But it's not that simple. And for members of the English-speaking community, foreigners who move here, whether temporarily for a few years in Kol, or even those that have lived here for many years, it's that much more challenging. You're an outsider. It's the kind of country where everything is run by insiders, protectsia, and so on. And it's very challenging. What we have set up is an organization called Chaim V'Chesed, which helps members of the English-speaking community navigate every aspect of life. Sometimes those are minor difficulties, and sometimes it's major crises, life and death, actual deaths, hospital, medical issues, and sometimes it's just the everyday grind of bureaucracy, difficulties communicating with schools, dealing with government offices, and so on.
And how large of a staff do you have who does this?
We have 7 people working for us right now and a number of volunteers as well.
And you're located out of which city?
We're based in Yerushalayim. We primarily serve the greater Yerushalayim area. What has happened, however, is there were a few articles written about us, Jerusalem Post, Mishpacha Magazine, and so on, and word somehow has spread very fast. We are now getting calls from all over the country. Today, Beit Shemesh, Tzfat, and so on. So we try to address those as well.
Well, if you continue with such success, I think Netanyahu may actually call on you to help him out.
He speaks good English, so we wouldn't mind helping him. But our goal is to help the English speakers manage here.
So give me, how did this come about? Like, how did this originate? Like, tell us a little bit of the history of Chaim V'Chesed.
Okay, so over the past number of years, I've been involved in all sorts of ventures of tzedakah, more tzedakah than chesed, actually. But what we found is that whenever you're involved in tzedakah, you're giving money to a poor family, but then you find out that they have a medical problem. You're helping someone with one need, but then they have a mental health crisis in the family, so you end up helping them with that. You're helping a family in one fashion, and then they have difficulties dealing with the government. So I was involved in various tzedakah or klal things over all the years, which often just we found ourselves sliding into chesed or different needs and became very firsthand exposed to the difficulties which English speakers particularly experience here. A big part of what we were doing tzedakah-wise involved the hospitals, so we became a little bit of mevinim in the hospitals, and there too we saw how difficult it is, like you say, really for anyone to navigate through the hospital, but certainly if you don't know the language, the culture, and so on. And we were already being called upon by different people. Could you stop in my relative's room? He's on the 8th floor in neurology, or I've got someone waiting in the emergency room for 12 hours not being treated. So I was involved in that, and it came to the point where we actually stumbled across a fantastic organization, which many of your listeners might be familiar with, in the Five Towns and Far Rockaway, called Achiezer. Achiezer is run by Rabbi Baruch Ber Bender, and that is a novel idea which they did, that they formed a umbrella organization for that community for all aspects of chesed, help with any area that you need. And that very much resonated with us because we saw a need for that here. We actually flew over to meet with them for extensive visit to see exactly what they're doing, learn what they're doing. We have some different needs than they do, but the concept of being one place where people could turn to and get assistance and whatever they need was really what we copied from them. And we didn't know until we did this how great the need would be. We're just being swamped by every kind of inquiry, call, need, and help, and we try to provide it.
So give us, our listeners, a story or two of how you've been able to be of assistance, something that's like of interest.
I won't tell stories. I'll give you actual cases. I'll just tell you from today. We're now talking about over 20 cases a day. This afternoon, an American living here for 4 years, unfortunately has cancer, was told that he was supposed to be taking chemo and radiation in Hadassah Hospital. He's been given chemo, and all of a sudden he realizes, hey, they never scheduled me for radiation. He finds out, because it's very difficult to get an appointment for radiation. It takes around 2 months, and he needs it now. He has no way to get that. Our guy in the hospital met with the doctor this afternoon, and they actually are full, but he squeezed them in for Sunday morning at 10 o'clock. That's one. We had another woman who has a child with rare disease, actually did a test at one hospital, but it was sent to a different hospital to get the results. She can't get the results back. She finally reached that hospital. They say, well, you have a debt here, so we're not releasing it. Another worker of ours went into the hospital. Number one, paid the chov on the spot. Number two, went to the other part of the hospital where he gets the results. We had the result. The results are already faxed to her. We have a boy sitting in a hospital right now in Yerushalayim, American yeshiva boy who has a critical condition, which he had a few weeks ago. We helped him then. It recurred this week. He's there. His father just flew in this morning. Until his father arrived, he had no clue what was going on. We were basically the father and mother interfacing with the hospital. That's just in the hospital areas, and we have special ed cases coming in all day long. We have a few people work on special ed. We have, just today, 2 recently diagnosed children with ADHD. The parents have no idea how to proceed. A couple of kids told that they cannot come back to school unless they take Ritalin or similar medications, and the parents have reasons why they don't want to give that. So dealing with the schools, dealing with the parents, explaining to the parents what's going on. An American woman trying to convert her degree to use in Israel, which is extremely difficult. A family with an autistic child trying to get him into a school today. A woman whose child's visa expired, so she got kicked off of her medical insurance, her Bituch Lomi, and the child needs medical care.
So how do you?
I can't make this stuff up. This is just what's.
So, Mr. Friedman, how do you manage to cover such a broad area? Like, it requires so many different fields of expertise.
Very good question. What we did is we took a full 6 months last year, from January till July, till the beginning of July, hired staff, not to do any work, only to do research, to make connections, to learn every topic, to find out who the players in each area might be. Often we'll just refer them to someone else good who's out there already. We wrote information guides on over 40 topics, how to make a license in Israel, how to get a visa, how to buy an apartment, whatever it might be. We prepared that stuff. So we took people who were capable and knowledgeable already, but they simply sat and learned up every topic, and then when we opened the phone lines, we learned an awful lot more, because we are still getting every day cases and challenges that we've never even heard of before. So, but we've basically learned the following: either we know the answer, or we know how to get you the answer.
Rabbi Friedman, is there any other organization in Eretz Yisrael that does something like this?
I've never heard of it.
So is it fair to say that any person who's listening to this program, who has a child learning in Eretz Yisrael, who has a parent living in Israel, should have your phone number for an emergency, almost like a type of Hatzalah almost, but not on such a high urgency level where you're going to come in 5 minutes with an ambulance. But if you have a family living there and you're a little bit at wits, you would be the go-to person?
100%. Our hotline operates 24 hours a day. It's 072 Chesed. That's Chesed. And we actually gave out a magnet recently, which has got Hatzalah, fire department, police, and in big letters, 072 Chesed. And that's how people look at it.
Now, Rabbi Friedman, if anybody would like to support your organization, how would they go about that?
We have a website, which is chaimvechesed.com, with two S's. On that website, you're able to go to donate, both American and Israeli tax deductible, and we'd welcome any support.
So thank you very much, everybody. This is your family in Eretz Yisrael, who can do almost everything. You have just met Rav Pesach Friedman, the mishpacha you did not know you had in Eretz Yisrael, who can solve your problems. You should never have them when you're over there, or if your family has them there. Thank you very much, Rabbi Friedman.